don't start trouble. Nobody's going to announce tomorrow. The results are not correct. If that happens, people will be provoking.
You're dealing with Jacob Zuma. Every stage is a theater for him.
Floyd will be a minister of finance if they agree. These people, because
the EFF and the ANC could still come together, possibly not if they make sure Floyd Chivambu, the Minister of Finance, as we have heard that demand.
If you come to us with a demand that Ramaphosa must step down as a president, that is not going to happen.
The broader question is whether our foreign policy has completely lost its way.
The people of Palestine, they're denied the right to enjoy the freedoms we so love.
That is a no-go area.
A lot of talk about ICOSA do hemorrhaging in membership, bleeding members. And considering what you had said about a ensuring that there's a well-oiled machine and that leaders on the ground need to be more engaged, the organizers and shop stewards as you and your members who you service and defend and workers are recruited and mobilized. What is the state of COSATU? And I would imagine also that with all these splinter parties from the ANC, it takes away from you in terms of your alliance with the ANC, because some of your members are now affiliated to other political parties. So there's a confusion there. How are you coping with all these changes, significant changes in the body politics of South Africa?
No, thanks, Liz. Look, firstly, you must say that we can appreciate that COSATU represent workers and on the issues of workplace, their rights, the working conditions. And of course, we do appreciate that the members that we represent are coming from different political parties. So, with the formations of new political parties, many of them that has come to exist at this time, we do understand that there would be that political affiliation of a member to a certain political party, but it does not change who we are as a federation. It does not change our responsibility as a federation from different unions to service members, because members join a union and a federation because of the coexistence. That's why COSATU has refused to become a political party, mm-hmm. even when others wanted to turn it to be a political party. We said, no, that's not who we are, because we understand our role. So the impact of new political parties should not necessarily have a direct impact in terms of membership to the federation. The loss of membership in different unions, what I can say now is as a result of the sectors of the economy, particularly in the private sector, because there during COVID we lost jobs. And the economy is still struggling to recover from that. That definitely would have a direct impact in terms of the membership that a union has, and therefore that of COSATU. But also, when we made our assessment, generally after the elections, and how do we rebuild ourselves, was also we could lose membership because of poor service to members. Had nothing to do with the politics, but just service to members, where you have organizers who at times will leave workers at the door of the CCMA or not do proper preparations for a case, or shop stewards that do not are not in touch with members at the shop floor. That would then give rise to members feeling disgruntled and therefore saying, but what am I getting from this union? These would be the reasons why unions lose members, not necessarily because of the politics in the country, But then Kosatu said, what we need to do is to pay attention to ourselves. What we need to do is to oil our engine. We need shop steward, as one will always define as the first line of defense of members. Make sure that you have shop stewards that are well trained in terms of understanding the labor laws in our country, but also the workplace policies, so that you are able to defend workers, but also you are able as a shop steward to also educate members in terms of their rights and what is it that they can and they cannot do. But also you need to have strong organizers who understand the responsibility of an organizer as an engine of a union, in ensuring that that engine is always, you know, hitting all cylinders for a better service of members, because organizers are paid by workers. And then you need to also have a leadership that is in constant touch with the realities that are faced by members on the shop floor. For an example, when now you have post office that is closing down, you have leaders that from the national level to the workplace who are with workers at the post office to understand what does it mean when a post office is faced with the crisis that it faces, and and also what are the alternatives for members. Do you have leaders and shop stewards who are saying, what are the trends globally? If post offices closing in, what is the alternative in the sector, and ensure that we get workers to be trained and ready for the alternative sectors of our economy, because we are moving to digital, artificial intelligence and all of that. And this is a kind of a trade union federation that we need to be, to ensure that we understand the challenges that workers are faced with, but also we are in touch with the realities that are taking place in the global markets, and how do we prepare workers to be reskilled, upskilled, to take on in terms of the new sectors of our economy. And that is what will ensure that we become relevant at all times.
How do you begin to do this repurposing? Because it sounds like somewhat of repurposing and the reorganization. When does it start, and how much time do you have, considering the changing climate in South Africa in terms of government as well?
The time that we have is now. And I say that because nothing is waiting for us. We have traveled the world, and we've seen, for an example, in Europe, where in the retail sector, you cannot avoid having self-service counters, as an example. It once came to be introduced in South Africa, and I said, why not? So we need to start bringing those discussions ourselves as trade unions at the table during negotiations, not for us to move to such, but to prepare for such eventuality. So the discussions that we need to be bringing now during the negotiations that are taking place in different sectors is to have a company that is able to share its vision of what would be the impact of this sector in the coming future, and therefore what kind of employees are going to be required, so that we bring that conversation ourselves as trade unions now, not wait for the employers, because when employers do so, it is because they say tomorrow is the first of the changes that must take place. and would have lost a lot of time. We would have not been able to pace ourselves in terms of that transition. But also we must be able to then put that conversation and say it has to be a just transition. Like we're saying in the energy sector that we want a just energy transition, it must be a just transition in all sectors. And the time is now. Listen again, you can't put definite time frames, but it is of immediate. It is important right now, because what we have seen during COVID is that we were all forced to use Zoom, Teams, and not go to work and not travel, but still continue to be productive in having our meetings online. There was no transition. We had to jump and get ourselves there. And I think as a trade union movement, we have learned from that. That is why we are calling for every union, every member, every shop steward to read the trends and let us force these engagements to be part of the discussions in the workplace so that we set the time, we set the pace ourselves. We are not forced to have a discussion. We are calling on the discussion. We are saying, let us talk about it, so that there is no employer that will say transition is taking place tomorrow and we are made to choose whether it is Section 189 of retrenchments because we are not ready, or employers begin to say, but we need foreign nationals to come in because we don't have this set of skills. So let us be able to have that conversation and identify what kind of skills are we going to need. Do we have them? We don't have them. How are we going to train our members? Do we need to create relations where we are posting members to certain countries to gain such skills? Or we are going to have them coming here? Or we are going to... But the sitters, the response of sitters also into what the market is going to need, because we're talking about the jobs of the future, looking beyond the jobs of today. And it's an ongoing discussion, but also we know where we are coming from. We're coming from steam engine. We have moved. Now we are on the electric car vehicles. We have not moved with, you know, in the mass in terms of getting ourselves there, but already in certain sectors, they are talking about bringing in electric vehicles. But are workers in the auto sector ready, have the required skills, so that when we are manufacturing in large proportions in terms of those electric vehicles, do we have the required skills for us to be able to compete with the world, or we're going to rely on others coming to South Africa to be employed, to be engineers of that, and operators, because South Africans are not ready. And we are saying, as a trade union movement, we need to begin these discussions ourselves, prompt them, because at the ultimate end, it is our members that are always at the receiving end, and not in a good way. They would lose employment because we're told that they do not have the required skills.
I want us to go back to what you were saying, and I think this is very important, what you've just opened up in this discussion, which is around reskilling workers. And what you were talking about when you said that 10 years ago, you said you were not ready, and government understood that. But there hasn't been a shift in the readiness in terms of South Africa to get with 4IR and and also artificial intelligence in the digital age. And the digital age is here, and companies are slowly shrinking the capacity in terms of skills because they are no longer reliant on people. Are you willing to accept that change now, or are we still not ready for that now?
Change is inevitable. We can't postpone it. That's why I'm saying we need to get ourselves ready. Because it is going to come. If we're going to be a country that is competing in the global markets, but also not just in the global markets. If we're going to be a country that is a gateway to Africa, as we are called, if we're going to compete in the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, if we're part of BRICS, and BRICS is not just about us, you know, being a last born in the family of BRICS, but a senior player in the game at the table. We are competing with China. We are talking about trade relations with China that is highly competitive. China that has moved and is creating artificial intelligence.
And India too.
Yes, India. You are talking about Russia that, I mean, even if you're talking about the defense ammunitions and all of that, these are the first world countries, and we are in a trade agreement and trade relations with them. Are we at par with them? And if we are not, then we need to up our game, because if we keep on postponing, then they are going to keep on coming as big uncles to South Africa, because they must give us what we do not have. It does not stop us from engaging in those markets. But because we don't have the right workers who are having the right skills, it means China must bring their own workers to South Africa. Not to even transfer, but to do the work that South Africans should be doing. So the rate of unemployment continues to rise. And therefore it means even when Africa Continental Free Trade Area is in full swing, South Africa would not be ready to really influence the skills that are needed. It means then we will still need to rely on China, India, and others to come in and say to us as the African continent, this is the skills that are required if we are to also trade with yourselves, but also because you don't have people that have the skills who have already well developed them, and Chinese people will be coming here. They are already in Africa. So how are we going to change it? It is not about what we say. It is going to be about how aggressive we are in moving away from being a developing country to becoming a developed country that is able to really compete on an equal footing with the rest of the first world countries. And therefore, it requires us as workers who are the drivers of the economy to be ready to drive that economy that is competitive with the rest of the world.
Does the character of trade unions or COSATU, does it change with this changing world? I mean, in the sense that, and this is me being a layman, in that what I would necessarily identify with COSATU is mass action. I would identify COSATU with influencing policy in terms of the ANC. Is that character changing with how we are seeing how South African politics is changing, how government has changed in the past couple of weeks?
Look, COSATU's character is, you defined it. We would adapt, but I don't think we will drastically change in terms of policy, influencing the policy, because it's not just influence the policy in the alliance discussions, but wide network. Mm-hmm. We have the national minimum wage today because COSATU over a decade ago brought this issue of the national minimum wage. Actually, it's even coming during the 1970s when our predecessors spoke about this. We kept on ensuring that we will not leave the space unchallenged. And today we have the national minimum wage on the national health insurance. the president and sign it into law, it is because we have made our contributions at NEDLAC and also in parliament. We came with a number of reforms. We are ready to work with the cabinet, the new cabinet. And we're not working with the DA. We're not working with the IFP. We're working with the cabinet of South Africa. Under the President Cyril Ramaphosa in the Government of National Unity. The policy position that we have does not change because now we're dealing with a minister that is coming from a different political party. Ours is principled. We're raising this that we're saying we don't want the erosion of the gains that we've made in 1994, but also we understand the vision that the country has and how we should move forward. And we will continue to negotiate, as we say, at the NEDLAC, in parliament, at the level of the alliance. But also we continue with the mass action in the street, because that's what the constitution allows us to do. What we do not win in the boardroom, we'll take it to the street with an intention of ensuring that we are building a better South Africa. And but whether then we would adapt to new ways of negotiation. We are an organization that keeps on growing. We have young people that are part of the labor market now. Even in how we do things, we do understand that we have evolved in how we communicate with our members, in how we set up, even in terms of the negotiations now and the things that we're putting in. It is because of the character of the federation with the new members that have joined the labor market, the young workers and all of that. We are dealing with a trade union federation that has public sector workers, you have professionals, you know, you have domestic workers. We are a federation that consists of workers that are coming from the most vulnerable to the professionals. And we have to be adapting to all of these in taking care of all of these members. We have the taxi workers union, that is an associate of the federation, working towards it being registered as a trade union so that it can affiliate to COSATU. And so doing things the old way is not going to work. We have to adapt. We have to understand the membership that we have. But also, it must be about us, how we engage and relate with other trade unions globally. So COSATU has to adapt as we move forward, but we do not lose who we are, the essence of who we are. We are not going to stop saying now we're going to protest only maybe through petitions. And it's one way of doing it, that you raise a petition, you have signatures and all of that. But that robust character of the federation cannot be lost in the midst of it, because it is the way that we understand that what we do not win, as I've said, at the negotiation table, we must take it on the street. But as we do so, and I've said this, Lizeka, in addressing the Nehao Political School and also the COSATU PEC, even in the CEC of June, I said, we must also not be a trade union federation that gets comfortable in having Section 77 from NEDLAC, and we go on the street and we have full-time shop steward and members are continuing to be at work running production. When Section 77 and the socio-economic issues were raising are the issues that are affecting workers and the general mass population of our country. But when we are going to a Section 77, it's just leadership and full-time shop steward, and the wheels of the economy are continuing grinding, so there is no impact. It must not be a Section 77 of, it's, because it's like we're going for a jog, you know, a walk, a fun walk, or it must correspond. It must, when a worker that is at the shop floor, COSATU is calling for Section 7, it must be because that worker on the shop floor understand why a Section 77 is called. And it must not take too much convincing for that worker not to join or to join the strike. It must be because it finds resonance with that ordinary worker. And these are the things that we have raised in the CC of how we're going to rebuild COSATU. You know, it must not be comfortable in talking to ourselves. And when a worker is asked about the very same issues, a worker cannot articulate them because they do not understand what it means.
Your assessment of the elections. I mean, several people have their own assessments, the chair, the ANC, Secretary General, I'm sure you see, Secretary General kind of pinning it to the Zuma factor. Yes, there are underlying issues, for instance, corruption and state capture and so forth. What do you think is, when you're assessing it as COSATU, what are the reasons that you have seen for this massive decline? It was dramatic. The decline was dramatic, not only in the provinces, KZN and Gauteng, but also nationally. What do you attribute this to?
I think government of the sixth administration, yes, they have built houses, but you begin to see the work done or spoken about on the eve of election, cutting ribbons, doing this. We understand that there's a lot of time that it takes before you can build a house and complete it. But we seem not to be communicating. I think government lacked of the sixth administration the communication on the work that government was doing and waited until the election period to do election programs around the delivery of services, when people have been waiting to understand what is the government is doing about their condition. And we began to see ministers coming through. Secondly, I think for me, it is the, as much as the ANC has done quite a lot in rebuilding the ANC, the step aside rule, but there was still a bit of conflict within the ANC itself about the step aside rule, for an example, and seen by others to be an ammunition to get rid of others, and you lacked that appreciation of what South Africa expected from the ruling party in terms of its renewal, and not just talking about it, but seeing that renewal and less of the voices that are opposed to it. We seem to have said to the people of South Africa, we are on a renewal path, but also there were voices internally within the ANC of those that were opposed to the renewal to an extent that even with the formation of MKP, you would begin to doubt where these people are standing. Could they be moving with? Are they in the ANC but outside the ANC and all of that? Of course, then it then says to the electorate, but if you have such internal conflict within the movement itself, how are we going to trust them with running a government where we need clean governance, if you must still argue about the step aside rule as an example of something that you are saying we must trust you because this is what you are going to do differently in the next administration? So for me, it is an internal factor in the ANC that I think the ANC should really begin to think deeper as to whether, for example, and I want to stretch it even further, should the NEC members of the ANC be available for cabinet? Or should the NEC members of the ANC be NEC members for oversight of deployees of the ANC in cabinet? Because then these discussions of step aside would not have them as a point of conflict in the NEC, because the NEC would be a political oversight of deployees who are in government and in cabinet. Not the same people who must do oversight for them about themselves. And then you have those that are ministers, deputy ministers, they are NEC members, and then there's a step-aside rule, it's affecting me, then I want to politicize it because I'm doing a political oversight over myself. I think the renewal of the ANC and the confidence that people would have to the movement is when you have the political oversight, which is the NEC, separated from those that are deployees in cabinet. And they're able to come back to the NEC to account and be called by the NEC. For example, the ANC goes to the NEC to hold. And you have deployees of the NEC in cabinet coming and chairing the commission, posing questions as to why the government of the ANC could not do 1, 2, 3. Are they not supposed to be answering in that ABC Lukhutla why you have not done 1, 2, 3? And when they are here, you must speak to them not as ministers now, but as comrades of the NEC. Then who becomes the minister deployed? So I think when we are to get to the renewal of the movement, we must get to a point where there is a political oversight, not just reliant on the officials of the ANC alone, but the NEC as a superior body between Congress that must really say how has the ANC performed. But now you have these deployees who are seated in this NEC. Others, you know, because look, the branch of the ANC has the power to put the leadership of the ANC, irrespective whether a person meets the criteria or not, in terms of the renewal of the ANC, it is about what the branch said. So then you get the leaders. But why must it be what the branches have dictated for us in terms of who then governs, in terms of cabinet? Because now the mandate of the branch is not equal to the mandate of the electorate. Because the mandate of the electorate supersedes the mandate of the branch. And therefore, then who goes into parliament and cabinet in particular cannot be on the basis who is popular in the branches. Because the popular person may not necessarily be the correct person.
I ask you about liberation movements and their timeline. Historically, their timeline is 30 years. And then they start losing the trust of the electorate in different countries. And then they start reshaping. Is it now time to say that the ANC is falling into this trap? Is the ANC dying? Is the ANC becoming a dinosaur?
We think the NEC or the ANC and probably the Alliance movement as a whole should be able to make this assessment on the failures of government. And we say, for example, I say some bills are left for a long time until they are brought in for them to be signed. We were arguing now, actually not even arguing, we were saying to the, we're meeting the Minister of Employment and Labour, Minister Meth, and we were telling her of, I think about over 10 bills that are sitting in her office. Of course, she's new. Parliament process has gone. They are sitting there. The minister is just supposed to take them to the next process of getting the president to sign them. So the president may not sign now because the bill is not coming, but the ministers are sitting with these bills, you know. So I think for me, accountability is in both ways. In terms of the deep race, hence I will say, until we get to a point where an assessment or a political overview of those that are deployed, whether they are effective or not, can only be done by people who have no interest. Otherwise, it will be a push-push. It will be, I'm making an assessment of you because I want to go in. But if we are saying in the ANC that anyone that comes in and you are available to serve in the NEC, it means it is not then an NEC for you to be in cabinet. It must be for you because you have the love of this organization and you want to make sure that the ANC remains accountable to the masses of our people. Not because it's one leg in for me to go up. Otherwise, we would not be having this discussion, the call that we've made on the step aside when a minister, former minister says, God, we're asking to the ANC, what happened to your step aside? He's an NEC member. So he's in the list. And he made the cut. So by any means possible, he must. Does that mean so he must? Even if he appeared in court, why has the ANC failed to set the step-aside rule? And said, but you are not already there. This section that you are quoting is the one that was used by to others who were in the cabinet and then they had to step aside, remained in parliament, but became quiet, like your advocate Bong at the time. So we're saying, okay, but this one, you are putting up a government. You are putting parliamentarians. This person is charged before you even get people to be sworn in, resigned from his previous post because of this. And you are then saying to this person, come in, you are going to step aside, but you are going to get inside. And then step aside when you are inside, just for you to earn a salary. Because it means you can't then participate, you can't speak on behalf of, you can't do anything.
But you can earn a salary.
But you can earn a salary. So the reason is because you must go and earn a salary. But in terms of you being effective in transforming the lives of our people, you are not going to participate. But people are going to pay you for sitting in. We think this step aside, there must be a clear cut into it. That you can't step aside and still be inside. So this is why we're saying that when we're calling for the renewal, accountability, and these are the things that the NEC should not even be having a big political argument about it, such that people are divided. You must have people that have no interest of being served, but have an interest of serving, and are NEC members. Because then the intended purpose of them also would be to answer the second question of a liberation movement that dies after 30 years. It faces such consequences of being eroded because of the conflict that those that are supposed to be ensuring that it is renewed, that it does not die, that it lives to liberate the people, because we are not done with the struggle that people persuaded. And people are not free, completely free. We don't have the economic emancipation, as we always say. So you have a responsibility of the ANC, its NEC, to continue, you know, pursuing that struggle on behalf of our people. But as soon as there is that conflict, then you ask yourself, why are we having such difficult debates that are personalized, that are individualized, that have moved us away from our existence and why we exist as a liberation movement to liberate our people, when we have not completed the task and now we are on a personal struggle of individuals? It is because of the assumption that once I become an NEC member, it then makes me a senior leader to be given an opportunity to be in cabinet.
It then speaks to this, the renewal, that this is this a genuine renewal? Or, and is everyone committed to this renewal?
It begs that question. The renewal, the renewal is genuine, mm-hmm. because this is a renewal that we have been called upon by the conference of the ANC. Whether individuals then that are elected to drive that renewal, to see it through, because they have been elected by the branches of the ANC, Kutwa Mandla, Sena Sibi. So the branches have put them there with the trust that they are going to implement these organizational renewal resolutions of the conference. Then who then polices those that are supposed to be implementers of this resolution? It's another question that perhaps we should, as a movement, be pondering on. The renewal program is genuine. You have people that are for the renewal, that wants the renewal. But of course, within that, you have people that would speak about the renewal, but it depends. It's subject to how is it going to affect me, or how is it going to affect certain of people who are my comrades, but not how it should affect the electorate. So it's a difficult one, but I still believe that once we are able to have that separation, then we are going to begin to have this renewal. Because you are going to have, you know, it's like the CPC, Communist Party of China. Once the Central Committee of the CPC sits, takes a decision, everyone just, you know, this is the lie. This is the lie. And here in our country, we are saying we want to take examples from China, but you must take an example of organizational discipline. Then people, it's you know, we don't mean it in its entirety.
Has COSATU made the suggestion to the ANC via its secretariat or via the bilaterals or alliance meetings around an NEC that oversees government instead of being in government?
We have made this call, of course, during the discussions, between the Lekgotla, and it could be in in commissions. But I don't know how it's the leadership that it's going to take for us to really begin to for them to see it in this way. And I remember I've raised it also in the during my time when I was in the NEC or the AIDS. We have an NEC that has 90% of the members at that time, or 99% would have been to China through a political program. People go to China. We want to be like Chinese. But there's one element that can make us be like them in terms of organizational design. But when we get to that, we seem to be called in terms of receiving that discipline. So it's going to take the renewal program for us to intensify it. But also it's going to take the kind of an ANC member. What kind of an ANC member do you have? Because it is this ANC member that goes to a conference and elect leadership. So the renewal is not just in the NEC. Mm-hmm. The renewal is the renewal of the organization from a member that joins the ANC. Why are you joining this political party? And it must not be difficult when a member has transgressed for the constitution of the ANC to be evoked. And I don't want to get into this issue now, but just to pick on it, there's a disciplinary hearing that has been kindly postponed of former President Jacob Zuma. You have a leader that is a leader of a political party registered as one. And there's no dual membership in the ANC of you. You can be a member of another political party and the leader is such that is sitting in the opposition, and then, but you must still go through, subject this person as a member of the ANC to the processes of the constitution. A person has violated the constitution. And now you must manage this, and then you've got probably people inside the ANC who are saying they are members of the ANC but are sympathetic to another person who has gone out to ensure that the ANC's electoral percentages are eroded. So we really need to say, who is a member of the ANC? And maybe also define the ANC itself, so that when I join the ANC, I know to join a political party is a 1, 2, 3, and 4, and I'm able to hold the leadership of this political party and myself as a member to be accountable when we are not doing what we said to society we shall do, but also have an ANC that does not exist for elections. Have a branch of the ANC, an ANC member that is able to say, "You're wrong, Orlando. It's not supposed to be done like this." As a conscious member of the ANC, that I understand what the ANC stands for. Ufanele nkwazukuthi, but this is not how things should be done if we are to build a better country.
I want to talk about the consequences of getting into a GNU, and maybe you have made your own assessment as COSATU, as the alliance, and you just were in the Nahal political school. Maybe members there were giving you an insight of what the ground is saying about in terms of the consequences of getting into a GNU with so-called neoliberals. And given your own stance in the past about the DA, you know, you've said that that the DA is in, well, DA has said that it's intent on removing the influence of COSATU in government. And when it comes to power, this is one of their main priorities they want to do, Satu, now your affiliates. What are the consequences to COSATU? What are the consequences to the alliance of getting in bed with this animal?
Whether the ANC is in the GNU or it was not in the GNU, like it's not in the GNU everywhere. In Gauteng, it is not. It is in the GNU, but GPU, but not with the DA.
Yeah.
In other provinces, it had an outright win.
Yeah.
So ours as a federation is to continue to fight for the rights of workers in South Africa, irrespective of who's in government. Remember, we are the federation that is in alliance with the ANC, but we have not shied away in critiquing the ANC government. We have not shied away in going out on the street. We have not shied away in putting alternative policy positions. We have not shied away in calling the ANC on its neoliberal policies. We are not going to start shying away now. COSATU CEC said, we have a responsibility as COSATU to strengthen the ANC inside the government of national unity. We have a responsibility as a federation to remind the ANC inside the government of national unity whom it represents. Now, whether we are in a GNU or we're not, whether the ANC would have chosen to be in the opposition benches, COSATU's plight will remain the same. What this GNU has presented for the federation is the unity of the federation. We do not have the luxury now of being divided. What it has presented is for the unity of workers in South Africa. We have no luxury now of being divided. As all federations, as all trade unions, COSATU is not going to change the way we've been doing things in terms of ensuring that we want a government to be accountable. We are going to hold the government of national unity accountable. To the workers, to the poor, to the unemployed. But we're also going to work with this government of national unity in ensuring that we have a government that is able to create an environment that those that are unemployed will have an opportunity to get employment. That is why we are on an accord. We're going to Washington now to speak to our counterparts, the AFL-CIO, to do what we did 2 years ago in December and last year in July as COSATU. Speak to the Republicans, speak to the Democrats, speak to our counterparts in why it is important for South Africa to get AGOA renewed for the next 20 years. Not just 5 years, not just 10 years. The importance of AGOA, not just to South Africa, but to the region and to the continent. So we are not just a federation that is quick to critique, but we're a federation that wants to make South Africa work. Because we understand that it is not sustainable if 42% of unemployment. It is not sustainable. And we're a federation that understands that we also cannot say because we want the creation of jobs and therefore we are going to forego the national minimum. So we understand the rights of workers as they are enshrined in the Constitution in terms of the Bill of Rights, but also in our labor laws. And we are a federation that is not going to accept that because we're in the GNU and that must be set aside. Because building an economy does not mean slavery. Because you are not going to build an economy just because firms can come, big capital can come and set up firms here and people are employed. Are you able to take care of yourself and your family? Or you borrow in order for you to go to work and maximize the profits of the big capital, and you are continuously cycling in debt as a worker. You can't even afford the products that you are producing. You can't consume them. So we have a responsibility, and we've acknowledged that we are going to continue to work with the government in building a better South Africa, in ensuring that the rights of workers are protected, in ensuring that jobs are created, the 42% of unemployment must go down, the young people must be able to be part of the labor market, but also not just as employees, but they must be entrepreneurs. We are here to make this country work, and we're going to work with the government of national unity, both in the public and in the private sector. And we're hopeful that what guides us as the vision for this country is not going to change because we have a different government. The programs that from the sixth administration must be able to carry on. We have Vision 2030. So it must not, we don't expect new policies from a briefcase of a different political party using cabinet and implement that. If we are to have coherence in how we're going to take South Africa forward, it is about building on what we've already started and hold each leader accountable.
Two prompt questions. I'll just squeeze everything in. Your reaction to SACP General Secretary and his statements around the GNU. So he said that the Alliance was not consulted on or the ANC. In fact, as the Alliance had made its own suggestions, and the Alliance felt it was better to coalesce with an EFF and create a minority government. And what do you think, given what you saw, I'm sure you read the Sunday Times yesterday, Mr. Mandasha saying that Helen Zille is creating her own parallel presidency with her DA ministers. Are you assured that, or confident rather, that this GNU is going to last the whole 5 year span? And what do you make of the spats, the back and forth between the ANC and the DA?
COSATU's responsibility is to ensure that government is held accountable. So it may last 5 years, it may not last 5 years. On whether there is a parallel government that Helen Zille wants to set up, cabinet is accounting to the president. What we were made to understand is that the appointment of cabinet and the responsibility of these ministers, they are accountable to the president. So I don't know about the parallel. I don't know what would have happened that would make Mokgweetsi to say that. I did not read that which you said. But then it makes you to be worried if a national chair of the ANC can say that. But what is it that the ANC was getting into? What do they understand to be a government of national unity? Now that you would have a national chair who would publicly say that it seems as if, or I don't know how he said it, that Helen would wants to create a parallel. You shouldn't be hanging those fears. You shouldn't. You should be confident that you have put a government of national unity and you have a president that has set up a cabinet and a government, and he is going to hold every cabinet member accountable. Unless then there's an understanding that we don't have, that there are limitations to the powers of the president, but they are not disclosed. Hence, then you would have a concern, probably, that it seems as if the DA cabinet members are accountable to Helen Zille. So I don't think Nkosi should be worried. If the powers of the president are intact and every cabinet member accounts to the president, Helen Zille can hold the deployees of the DA accountable in her political party, like the ANC NDC should with the deployees of the ANC in cabinet and in government. I don't know whether that's what it means. I don't know what Helen Zille would have said or done. But the DA has a responsibility to its deployees to hold them accountable. The IFP, the EFF, and everyone. Like we should, as electorate, voters, to the political leaders, that we must hold you accountable because we have given you a mandate of 5 years. Because we have endorsed this government of national unity, and therefore we must hold you accountable. We have that responsibility to do so.